All right, everyone, what a special guest I have today. If you recall, maybe one of my first 100 episodes, right around 80 or so, we had my guy, Peter Krohn, come to the show. And if you have not listened to that show, listen to this one, but then you got to go back and listen to that one because everything will make sense. It's like a two-part movie, but you can watch part two before part one and the one before part two. It doesn't matter because Peter Krohn, the mind architect, is here. And man, when I talk about mind architect, we're going to talk about some stuff. You know when someone says something, you're like, that makes so much sense. Well, that is a culmination of everything that Peter does. He just lights light bulbs above people's heads. And my guy is on the show finally for number two. Welcome to the show, Peter.
Dr. G, such a gangster intro. I love it.
Listen, you are the illuminator. The mind architect and the illuminator.
I like that.
You do little light bulbs and people go, oh, God, it makes so much sense why I'm the way that I am.
Right. It's absolutely
amazing. Eloquently, simplistic, just a cuts right through and you make sense. It's a gift. I'm happy to have you on the show, man.
It's great to be with you, my friend. I always love your company, and just that riff there is just so beautiful, so smooth, so flattering. Thank you. Yeah.
I've been doing it for a little bit. It's all the freestyle rapping I do on.
Oh, that's
the
right. You know, it just spoken word out. With
spoken
Dr. G.
Word. Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, hey, whoa, I have, you know, I've been following you for a long time. We've been friends for a long time.
Yeah.
And it's like it's making more sense to people now. It's like we're more open listening. Mm-hmm. People want to improve more than ever. That's what I'm seeing, at least mentally, emotionally, even physically.
Yeah.
But I want to go from the beginning.
Yeah.
What's the biggest obstacle to us improving as human beings in your experience?
I mean, solid question out of the gate. I'd expect nothing less. I think the biggest illusion, because it's sort of a catch-all, is the illusion of separation, right? So one of my quotes, you know, I write in quotes. I think I probably shared a couple on the first episode, part one. But as long as you perceive yourself as a separate entity, you have no choice but to survive. Mm-hmm. Right. So think about it in terms of second laws of thermodynamics. Like, as long as an individual or an entity is taken apart from the whole, there's entropy. It just falls apart. So if you're not part of the gang, you're not part of the tribe, you're not part of the family, you're not part of the group, then in primal terms, you have to fend for yourself. Mm-hmm. So that is where, for the most part, people struggle. Relationships, health, wealth, any arena of life that we all want to thrive in, is there's an impediment based on the fact that you think it's a you there that has to do something. Mm-hmm. So that's the biggest obstacle right out of the gate, is the illusion of separation, which is really it's the fundamental structure of the identity or the ego that we think we are, is that part of its actual format is that it's individual. It's a separate, like, I can't look through your eyes and your experience. I can't have your feelings. If I'm a great listener, I can as much as possible have empathy and compassion, which I enjoy doing for people, but I still can't have your experience. So the equipment itself of brain and body gives the illusion that there's a me here and there's a you there. And then whatever, based on our conditioning, I have to do what I think I have to do to be loved and accepted by you. And you're doing the same thing with your own means of coping strategies and compensations. And that's actually the obstacle to true intimacy and connection. That's why most relationships don't work.
Yeah.
So
it's the separation. So we are, like you said, hardwired. This is our physical experience is like, it's very clear to me. I'm here in this chair with this microphone and this pink hoodie, and you're over there and
sick,
you got your
hoodie,
Scooby-Doo. But... yeah, I love the Scooby-Doo shirt. That's one of my favorite cartoons, you know? You brought back up. So there's time and there's space between us.
Yeah.
It's going to take me 2 seconds to walk to you and you to me.
Yeah.
So how do we begin to transcend this illusion that me, you, distance in between?
Great question. So obviously in the manifest world, there is going to be space. And as a result of space, it gives rise to time in terms of the movement in space. So this isn't necessarily literal. Like, we can't merge our bodies. I mean, if you watch The Matrix and Neo like dives head first straight into the agent and sort of merges with him, you know, I've got some pretty cool powers. I don't have that one yet.
Not yet.
So really the dissolution of the illusion of separation is more to do with the conversation about it versus the literal experience of it, right? So I'm still clearly here. I'm having a conversation with you, but it's within the fabric of the whole, right? So look at something like the ocean. and people go, hey, look at that. That's a great wave, especially if they're surfers, right? They're talking about the wave, but the wave only exists by virtue of the distinction in language. The ocean isn't going, that's a cool wave. The ocean's just, no, this is all me. I'm all ocean, right? So it's only by virtue of the linguistics that we've created, like you're Dr. G, I'm Peter, like we all have these sort of placeholders in time and space, but in language. I'm British, you're American. Like, there's no such thing other than how it delineates our personality. So to overcome that is not so much I'm going to merge with every cell of your body, but it's really that I'm recognizing your body, my body, we're all part of the whole fabric. So there's no separation from the whole. Mm. Within that, there's going to be the experience of relativity, which is actually the only way that we have experience.
Yeah.
I mean, I had this as a visceral experience. I was years ago stretching my calves before I went for a run, and I was leaning up against the wall. And very similar to this, just a white wall. But you can see here, even like I can look at yours, I'm sure you can see this, there's delineations, right? There's differentiation. There's a little bit of paint that's raised. There's different marks. But for whatever reasons, as my eyes got close to the wall, it was so perfectly uniform that I got a little disoriented. Like, I don't know if you've snowboarded or skied in a whiteout, mm-hmm. right? Where the snow and the clouds merge and you don't have any perspective. So what I realized at the moment is like, oh, consciousness as a unity, as one entity, doesn't have an experience of itself without relativity.
Mm.
So that's the beauty of the game, is that yes, it occurs as though we're separate, which is necessary to have an experience and to have relationship, to relate to other space time, even to relate to myself, but it's all part of the whole fabric. But that's the exploration of consciousness itself, is without the diversity, without the we wouldn't know that we're one.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the beautiful paradox about being human.
That's beautiful. So then is the part of it then for us to have the experience of the illusion of separation, for us to remember that we're one, or is it also for us to be in relativity and be like, well, for me to know myself as empathy, I need to know myself as not empathy.
All the above. So both, right? So again, one of my quotes, I'd say, yes, we're all one, but would we know that without the we?
Right.
Right? So it's sort of one of these koans, you know, like sort of an awakening conundrum that you sit and meditate on and hopefully have some epiphany. But so we need the relativity in order to be able to discern that we're not separate. But the beauty of then actually transcending that and realizing, oh, I'm part of the whole, is it shifts the experience for the individual from fear, limitation, and suffering to really freedom, love, and possibility. So I'm still here. I'm still separate to you physically, but I'm not going to be coming from a place of animosity or judgment or fear or that you're a perceived threat, because you're part of me. You're an extension of me. Everything is a reflection of me at the deepest level. Mm-hmm. So it's an entirely different world to operate in versus functioning from a place of pure survival, which is the default factory settings of the brain and the ego. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, hang on a minute. I am and I always have been held in ways that I didn't fully comprehend when I was looking through the illusion of separation, which gives me that sense of just inner peace.
Yeah.
Which changes everything in the way that I think, feel, act, and consequently the results we get. Most people are in the state of survival, separation, trying to have a better relationship, trying to have a better body, trying to make more money, all with the best of intentions and maybe even some good strategies, but it's always going to fall short because you're not tapped into source. You're an isolated unit.
So for us to tap into source, talking about strategies, it begins with a relationship with our body, with ourself. Should we start? Like, there's going to be people listening, viewing, go, I'm in survival mode.
Yeah.
And I'm just realizing it when I'm hearing this podcast.
Yeah.
How do I move away from this default mode that we're in and go into a more higher operating system or deeper levels?
No, it's beautifully articulated. So the first thing is to notice it. That's exactly where you have to start, is go, oh, wow, the way that I speak to my wife, my husband, my parents, my boss, whatever it is from a place of inherent fear. It's just become normalized. Like, things that we have done, usually most people listening to this are going to be adults, 20, 30, 50, whatever years on the planet. So most of their habits have become so normalized that they don't know that there's a different option. They really think that their neighbor is a pain in the ass. Like, it's not a truth, because if I talk to the neighbor on the other side, he's like, no, Dave's awesome. I love Dave. You know, so it's like, who's true? So you start to realize that who you are is a walking view, but the view is based on the accumulation of trials, tribulations, failures, disappointments, heartbreaks, all the things that we go through, and then certainly our care providers and the things that they say to us. And we adopt those scripts as though they're fundamental truths. So first notice where you are stuck, that you are in survival, that things do trigger you. Like, that's always the opportunity, is to see, where do you get upset? You've probably heard this one. It's one of my more popular quotes, which I say, life will present you with people and circumstances to reveal where you're not free. So really, life is the conduit. It is the, we are the beneficiaries of struggle, which might sound, you know, counterintuitive. People are like, I don't want fucking struggle. It's like, well, struggle is only the perspective you have, because once you start to recognize the domain of your own extraordinary nature, there is no struggle. The struggle only belongs to the identity. Mm-hmm. So, long-winded answer to the question, but you have to notice, first of all, you are in survival mode. Then investigate, what is the underlying fear? It's always going to be a perceived threat. That survival is like, I'm not going to be okay. Like, and that might be rent, not going to meet someone, I'm not going to get promotion, I'm not going to be able to get a new job, or whatever the perceived threat that's a future-based connotation. That's one fear. For a lot of women particularly, it might be, I don't feel safe. I don't feel safe in the world. I don't feel safe in my relationship. I don't feel safe in the workplace. And for the individual, it's justified, right? We don't want to deny people's feelings, but we want to look at the fundamental truth. Is it a truth that you're not safe, or is it just how you feel? Mm-hmm. And usually it's just an experience. It's not a fundamental actual state of existence. Mm-hmm. So once we've investigated that, then we can say, well, if it's not true that you're not enough, if you're not going to be okay, you're not, whatever the not is, N-O-T, who could you be? Then that's when the freedom starts to come. It's like, wow, I've been a people pleaser, a perfectionist for 20 years, but that was on the foundation of the belief of inadequacy, that I wasn't enough, which was because my older brother was the athlete or my sister was the academic and they got the attention and I didn't. So what that for me meant was that my parents didn't think I was as good as them, and I've compensated over the last 3 decades, and I might have the Mercedes in the corner office and whatever as a compensation, but really my energy is, I'm not enough. And that's exhausting. See, is it true? We're like, where am I going to find this not enough? It's a conversation. It's not a truth. Who could you be in the absence of that? My God, I'd be so relieved. And then you start to see that all we've ever been up against is our own dialogue.
Incredible. Because that is what creates our persona that we live by. And we just identify with, oh, well, this is Dr. G.
Yeah.
Right. And all of these things that drive me. No, but, and then the hard part is, right, like, we've got that corner office and we got all the awards and accolades and people tell us we're doing so well.
Yeah.
We even stick to that identity even more. It's the driving. Sometimes that not enoughness caused so much success in our lives. Yeah. So,
That becomes then that self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Like, because the ego is, you could say the ego, and the ego gets a bad rap, like it's a bad thing. Ego, I'm just saying interchangeably with persona or your identity. It's just the you that you are for yourself is primary imperative is to be right, because it doesn't have any foundation of itself. It's just language, right? There's no actual truth there. So you need the evidence to reinforce the conversation and the narrative. It's so slippery. So people often say, we'd rather be right than free. And when you see that, it's like, oof.
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
That's a tough one, because we suffer in that I'd rather be right so much.
Yeah.
So then what does, when we go, okay, I'm noticing this, I have awareness around it, I've been in survival mode, now I'm choosing to see myself as like this struggle be part of this evolution and bringing me more freedom.
Yeah.
How do we know we're bringing in more freedom in our lives? Is there a somatic feeling in our body? Mm-hmm. Is there a clearing? Are our relationships better? How do we know that we're really going on the right way of creating the space towards more and more freedom? Now let's chat about something crucial, that is omega-3s. You know I'm all about keeping clean and pure when it comes to products, as well as food on my plate. But when it comes to supplements, right, we have to make sure we have the best of the best, but especially when it comes to omega-3s. And I really mean it. Omega-3s are some of the most adulterated supplements that exist out there. And a lot of companies aren't doing it right. We need omega-3s for our heart, for our brain, for our eye health. You might not be getting enough nutritionally. When it comes to Peori, it's a quality brand, not only just with omegas, across their whole line. They're extremely transparent. Every batch undergoes rigorous testing against over 200 contaminants, and you could check the results for yourself. And that's one of my favorite things. You can scan the QR code and look at the batch that is right in front of you, that is on your shelf or in your counter, and you can see the results for this quality testing. Pure's O3 Ultra Pure Fish Oil delivers a potent dose of EPA and DHA without any unnecessary extras. Now, Pure is offering 20% off of their O3 Ultra Pure Fish Oil, the one that I take every single morning, and all their fantastic products to you, the Heal Thyself listener. That's 20% off even the already discounted subscription price. I want you to go to Puri.com. Use my promo code DRG, that's Puri.com/DRG, to take care of your health with some of the best omegas out there by Puri. You know I'm all about staying hydrated, especially with pure, clean water. You see, water is not just a beverage for me. It is a vital part. It is a staple of health. But you want to get clean, high-quality water. And did you know that almost 45% of U.S. tap water contains PFAS? This is the harmful chemical that can have serious implications. If you've ever seen the movie Dark Waters, you know what I'm talking about. Shout out to Mark Ruffalo in that movie. And that's why I want to talk to you about Aqua Chew. I've been promoting Aqua Chew even before I had a podcast. Aqua Chew is certified to remove these contaminants along with 80 other harmful substances. I'll break it down for you. Aqua Chew has a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process that ensures your water is clean and safe to drink. And the best part, there's no complicated installation or plumbing needs. It's right on your countertop. And Aqua Chew has options for every home, from countertop purifiers to under the sink models. And one of the best part is their filters are affordable and long lasting. So you don't have to worry about constantly replacing them. Some of the worst parts of water filters is that every few months you keep replacing or keep replacing and keep priming and keep doing it. Speaking from personal experience, it makes a big difference. I can taste when the water is reverse osmosis and remineralized. Something that I always do, I put my water through the reverse osmosis system by Aqua Chew, and then I'll remineralize it with some salts. Aqua Chew is offering you, the Heal Thyself listener, an exclusive 20% off of any purifier. Go to aquachew.com and enter the code DRG at checkout. That is AQUATRU.com. And don't forget to use the code DRG for your discount. How do we know that we're really going on the right way of creating the space towards more and more freedom?
All the above, because relatively works in every domain. So the previous tension, you know, is a very crass example. If you're on the highway and you've been driving for a few hours and you need to use the bathroom, and the next rest stop is a while away, like, you know, you feel the tension of just the pressure on your bladder, just this very simple anatomy, right? So, but the degree to which you felt constrained and discomfort because you needed to go take a pee, and then when you get there, and it's the relief, right? So, yeah. So that's the first thing to notice, is that there will always be an experience of some form of liberation and lightness that comes on the other side of transcending a constraint. That then, the beautiful thing about it, it does cascade into the body. See, like I'm as, you know, categoric as saying that you can't access true health physically unless you free your mind. That to me, it's that categoric.
I agree.
You can get to a place of some sort of health, but as long as you're living in survival, then you have to be in sympathetic mode. You're dumping cortisol, adrenaline, noradrenaline, all the things in your body. You're not going to sleep properly. You probably don't digest your food properly. It might show up as some sort of digestive issue. They say that you've got Crohn's, celiac, whatever it is. But to me, they're all symptomatic. They're all downstream from the fact that if you're living in here in some sort of prison or prisons, then your body doesn't know how to fully relax. So that's the first thing, is to notice the liberation, the lightness that comes over someone. And I always see it when I'm working with people. I will invariably point it out so they get that feedback. I was like, that was a nice breath. They're like, oof, yeah, I really let go of something. So the cascade into the body is instantaneous. So the vitality that I assert is always there, is always trying to flow. But when there's constraint, it doesn't actually access every cell of our body. So when we remove the blockage, which is the linguistic dialogue of insufficiency or insecurity or scarcity, then vitality just starts to flow through the body. So you feel it. What does that mean? You've got more energy. You're more at peace. What does that mean in relationships? Well, I'm much more pleasant to be around. I'm less reactive. I'm less argumentative or hostile. So relationships improve. Your value in terms of self-worth also becomes exponentially better. So that usually manifests in your finances or in your career. Like out of nowhere, you just got a new job offer, you got promoted. So the energy, it's all interlinked, right? So as I step into freedom on the other side of these constraints, there's an entirely new arena to explore, and every area of life just for that reason just gets enhanced.
Yeah, I mean, we all know that feeling. Maybe for some people it's a sliver in the week where they just feel alive and they feel like healthy, and they don't have their anxiety that day or the depression. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like that vitality that's flowing through your cells. You feel healthy.
Yeah,
you know, you want to go work out, you want to go on a date, you want to do all these things.
Yeah,
but that's our inherent space to be. We Correct. Should be vital.
Yes.
And imagine Correct. A world where people would be connected that way.
I mean, that's like, what I'm committed to
And helping. That's what you're committed to doing. That's beautiful. Now, you mentioned just a little bit ago about safety.
Yeah.
And I saw one of your videos recently on the masculine and feminine aspects.
Oh, yeah.
And I got to ask about this stuff. What is your perspective on, you know, we have our own inherent stories, our constraints. Mm-hmm. We bring that into a relationship. What is the reason that relationships keep degrading at a staggering rate, you know, divorce at a staggering rate?
Yeah.
Are we meant, is it because we're just not, it's not a good fit, or are we meant to work through things in relationship in order to come to this free place together? What's happening in these relationships that so many people are just like, it's not working for me. I can't find anyone.
No, it's a great question. And obviously I would never be so audacious to think that I could speak to the billions of relationships out there in a couple of minutes. But as a general theme, you know, to whatever degree this resonates with the people listening, it stems back to what I said, that primal design of the brain and the ego is that I'm separate. So if you think even of the word relationship, oh, like I just fell in love with someone, or we have a great relationship. Relationship already implies two or more, right? I'm relating to something. So it speaks from the perspective of I'm separate, but now I found, right? So first of all, for me, that's the illusion. Again, I'm not expecting people to live from this perspective, but we're all connected. So of course you felt related. It's just what we're actually doing is removing what's in the way of the already perfect connection. So that's a different take on relationships, right? So, you know, I tell people everybody loves everybody. It's just most people don't know that yet. Right. Because you have your guard up, you've got your dukes up because you're in survival mode and it's like someone's a perceived threat. So in the absence of the ego and the illusion, the absence of it, then there really is just unity.
Yeah.
Which is beautiful. First of all, right. Poetic, philosophical, maybe not so practical, but if at least you can lean into that. Right. Then you can start to see, OK, in my relationship, what aspects of my identity are being triggered by the other person, because we always will attract the person that is best suited right now for whatever it is that we're working on, right? Relationships to me are the best conduit to be able to reveal these constraints with which we arrived, right? If it's just superficial, you're not really connected, you don't go deep enough into the marrow of your own ego that needs to be sort of revealed so that you can transcend it and ultimately mitigate it and let it go. So that's why is that people think they're separate. They're being driven invariably by ego constraints of inadequacy, insecurity, or scarcity. And they use each other, meaning the two people, to justify their perspective. Going back to, I want to be right, that what you did was inappropriate. Well, making people wrong and judging people is a victim mindset. It's just categorically, it's an on-off switch. You're either a victim or you're fully at source and responsible for your existence. Most people don't want the latter. Much easier to point fingers, whether it be a corporation because, you know, McDonald's coffee was too hot and I'm going to sue them, or whatever the fuck people do. But that's why people then have this feeling of powerlessness. So that's, to me, that's sort of the two predominant things is one, you're in the illusion of separation, so you're not really bound. And two, because of the feelings of inadequacy in that back and forth, that battle of egos, you're not actually relating because people don't know how to listen. It's self-defense. You're not honoring someone's reality. You're listening at what they're saying, and how does it like relate to my perceived safety, value? Am I being loved here? Am I being appreciated? Versus just getting their reality. It's just a human being who's expressing something. Now, of course, there's a gamut. You know, if someone's being really hostile, really abusive, God forbid, physically abusive, then yeah, get yourself out of that situation, right? But if it's just words, then you're being impacted by your own perception, not what someone's saying. Mm-hmm. So the work in terms of having a relationship, as you know, cliche as it is to have the best loving relationship with yourself, where you recognize you're a sovereign being, you have freedom, your worth is inherent. And for that reason, not that you command respect, but that's inbuilt in the way that you'd want people to treat you because that's where you come from. If somebody feels inadequate, they feel they're worthless, they're not valued, they're not loved, they're not wanted, then they are going to garner from their environment the kind of person that will sort of reflect that. So someone, especially sadly, usually a woman who's in a physically abusive relationship, anyone with their right mind doesn't want to be in that situation, but there's some payoff for her that she gets to be right about the fact that she's a piece of shit or nobody loves her. And so this current dynamic reinforces that. That's how insidious but also dysfunctional the ego is. It'd rather be right about a very discomforting situation than actually discover its own phenomenal essence of the true soul that we are. So you started with the, so that's, they're the dynamics, some of them, you know, there's many, it's very subtle, but the safety component is big. I think if there's going to be one factor that people who are committed to being in a relationship really want to make it work, is that both people have to recognize to what degree are they a safe space for the other person. And it presents slightly differently in the masculine and the feminine. As a stereotype, not always, the safety that the woman is looking for, craving, and honestly deserves is physical safety. It's a little bit more in that domain, right? Like how many women walk around a street at 7-8 o'clock at night and it's dark. As sad as it is to say, there's an inherent fear for them because for freaking centuries, they've been abused by the masculine, right? There's no reason. They're probably going to get home fine. They get their groceries. They get to their car, whatever has to happen, but they're not at peace because there's this perception that there's a world out there, especially if a guy's walking towards them on the same side of the street or like they're in my perhaps idealized world, there should be no need for that woman to be in a state of fear. So safety for the woman in a relationship usually manifests in the way that she doesn't feel fully held. And that's oftentimes because men, myself included in past relationships too, like don't always fully commit, you know, and that's hard. That's hard for men to look at. Like, have you been a real stand? Have you been fully committed for your lady in the face of whatever she expressed? And women express the gamut of relation of emotions, let's face it. So that's number one, safety for the woman. Now, where a lot of women don't take responsibility, you know, that's sort of pointing at the guys. Hey, dude, step up, hold your woman, metaphorically, figuratively, but also literally. Let her know that you're not going anywhere, that you're the rock. For the women to be responsible and accountable for where they contribute to a relationship that's dysfunctional and perhaps falls apart is that the safety manifests slightly differently for the man, just anatomically, physiologically. We're stronger. We don't necessarily worry about that so much. But where men become, and especially sympathetic, empathetic, compassionate, sensitive guys, they struggle in the arena of safety as it relates to emotional expression. That they're going to say something and they're going to hear the wrath of their wife, their girlfriend, the mum, right? So a woman's opportunity to support the masculine is much more in being a compassionate listener and let the guy say what he's saying. And of course, they both overlap, right? Like, so the man's role is also to allow his wife, girlfriend, or whoever to express herself fully and not necessarily take it personally, understand she is maybe just saying something that she doesn't mean, but it's a way that she's expressing her emotions. So that is two particular archetypes. I'm not saying these by any means are the comprehensive view of relationships, but when you can look at it, are you as a man being responsible for being fully, the provider of the experience of safety for your partner as the way that she's held? And for the woman, are you fully allowing your partner, in this case, the masculine, to feel that he can say something without being chewed to pieces, you know, cut to shreds and you having an emotional reaction? And I don't think women understand how powerful they are in that regard, that because oftentimes you hear from women, again, as a very common expression, oh, I just don't know how he feels. He doesn't express his feelings. He's not emotional. My invitation to that woman who's saying that is, how easy are you to talk to? And I know from experience that I have definitely had experiences where it wasn't easy to talk to a person because they were very reactive. They interrupted. They didn't honor my experience. It doesn't say my experience was true. It's just how I feel. And that's a power of listening that most humans on both sides, you know, could really benefit from learning.
Yeah, you know, I saw, and it's so true for the men, because we tend to just grow up kind of holding our words inside anyway, our opinions.
Mm-hmm.
Men don't tend to be very emotional, for the generally speaking.
Yeah.
Maybe they might be opinionated, but mm-hmm. really the emotion behind it.
Yeah.
And the space for the man to feel safe to say, hey, honey, I got to tell you something. Like, this is how I've been feeling about X, Y, and Z. It may not be what you see in mm-hmm. your reality, but it's so real in mine.
Yeah.
And oftentimes, we're just scared to express that
yeah.
because we know what's on the other side and it's not going to be worth it.
Exactly.
We're not trying to argue. We're not trying to be cut down. We're tired. We have to go to work.
Yeah.
And it's so true that so many men, because, you know, I hear so much about the men being the rock and creating the space for women to express, but we don't talk about enough that the men need a space to express their truth too.
Absolutely. And that's why it's something that I'm very passionate about sharing, because I think women, when they hear this, through no judgment, this is not an accusation. Yeah. It's just an observation. It's an opportunity that if you really care about your man, and it could be a son, it doesn't have to be a husband, it could be a boyfriend, it could be a coworker who's a male. But to what degree? Because if you look at it in terms of the archetypes from care providers, right? The father figure in the family traditionally is the rock, right? Again, we're getting into these stereotypes, but usually the breadwinner, he's the one that does the lifting, the moving, the fixing, the driving, the things that provide this feeling of like, okay, he's got our back. But the mother is the nurturer. And so the nurturing quality is like, come here, it's okay, I've got you. There can be a physical embrace, of course, but it's more, I will love you regardless of what you did or what you're going through, or the fact that you've got a boo-boo or you fell over or you didn't get picked for the soccer team or whatever it is that you've gone through. So the feminine, I don't think they fully, and for good reason, right? Like, women have been beat to shit for so long, literally, figuratively, emotionally, they're kind of tired, you know? And so much of the wrath that we hear, what to a guy might seem as overreactionary, drama, dramatic, is really the accumulation of many generations of women not being held. It's quite the antithesis. You know, think about that. Like, a woman who, you know, biologically we could say, I know there's a lot of contention about this, but is, you know, sort of the weaker of the two just based on pure physics, right? Anatomy. And yet she's in a house, in a space, trying to create a family with a man who is representing the predator, the threat. That's no fucking easy game to play. Right? Like, so women have to become very strategic. That's why they become very manipulative. They play these games because they're not held fully safe. They're not in a container where they know that no matter what, my man's got my back. Mm-hmm. As sad as that is to say, you know, there's a lot of work for both sides to do. Like, guys have got to step up, like, you know, stop lying, stop cheating, stop, you know, whatever you're doing. And if you want to be in a relationship, if you don't, that's fine. You can do whatever the hell you want to do. But if you're declaring, especially in vows in front of people in a church or at a ceremony, you know, for good and bad until death do us part, all these things, well, then fucking step up. Yeah. Right. And I'm speaking to myself and everybody in that regard. This is something I'm committed to in the right container with somebody. But then I'm also at the same time saying to the feminine, which is the part that often doesn't get looked at, like, hold your guy too.
Yeah.
Let him show vulnerability, because women crave that. Like, I mean, you and I are probably, I'm super vulnerable. I go there a lot, but I've also been in situations where I've been vulnerable and it wasn't met. And that's tough. You know, that's a bit of a red flag, right? Like, where you show some sort of, it's not even a weakness, right? Because it's not necessarily that we're weak. It's just a feeling that I have, a feeling of whatever we might have. But if there isn't a space that is safe to speak into, then there is going to be natural division. There's going to be a divide and a separation.
Yeah.
I mean, the one example, I was working with a baseball team, and this was male on male, but it sort of speaks to the same dynamic, which is the manager of the team came to me. I was sort of accountable for the mindset of the team. And he said, hey, you know, I'm struggling with one of our pitchers. He went to the media and shared something that really is a family in-house issue. It shouldn't be out there in the public. And he was pissed. He's like, you know, this is something we should resolve in the clubhouse, in the locker room, not through, you know, some journalist. And I said, no, I agree. It's a very sensitive subject that we don't necessarily want out there. And I said, but let me ask you a question. How easy do you think it is for the pitcher to talk to you? Because I knew they had some sort of history. And to his credit, he got what I said. He's like, yeah, I'm not the easiest guy to talk to. I said, I know he has a great relationship with that journalist. Mm. So he probably feels heard. And that's all we want. We all want to be seen. We want to be heard, and we want to be held. At that moment, he took responsibility and he cleared it up. Of course, at that point, the story was already out, but he went and apologized, said, hey, I realize I'm your manager, but I don't show up that way. I want you to know you can come and talk to me about anything. Because it's cliche. It's like, oh, the door's always open. Come on in. You know, whatever people say. But is that genuine? Is it sincere?
Yeah.
Do you really actually mean you can tell me anything? And if a woman listening right now thinks that she can, and she wants to be powerful and accountable, then when was the last time that you really offered that space to your partner, to your man, to be able to share anything? However embarrassed he is, however much shame and guilt he has about it, that would be a gift for relationships.
It's been a long time since I promoted a coffee because there's not that many good coffee brands. We got one of the best ones now on Heal Thyself. Are you ready to elevate your coffee game? An experience approved that's not only delicious, but it's also health focused. Let me introduce you to Purity Coffee. You heard me review them in one of my first ever coffee reviews as one of the best, and then my second ever one as one of the best. And it's one of the best still. It's an ultimate choice for coffee lovers who prioritize taste as well as well-being. I'm going to tell you what makes Purity Coffee stand out from the crowd. Every step in their process is rooted in health focused principles backed by solid scientific research-based rigorous testing. They use the finest specialty grade organic Arabica beans and then move on to small batch roasting, ensuring that each cup meets the highest standards of quality. But what really sets Purity Coffee apart from all the other coffee brands is their dedication, is my favorite. It's their dedication to purity and safety. Their beans undergo third-party testing to ensure they're free of pesticides, toxins, and harmful mycotoxins, those pesky substances that can wreak havoc on your health, causing issues like liver and kidney damage, digestive problems, brain fog, and fatigue. Purity Coffee also has some of the highest antioxidant capacity. And this is important because we have to understand coffee is actually really good for us when we're getting quality coffee. And the reason it's good for us and ensures so many benefits, especially heart health, is because of its antioxidant capacity. Purity has one of the highest antioxidants that you're going to find in coffee, giving you a powerful dose of healthy boosting compounds with every sip. Purity Coffee is grown on regenerative organic farms that prioritize soil health, animal welfare, and community well-being. They have certifications by USDA Organic, Rainforest Alliance, and Smithsonian Bird Friendly. You can also trust Purity Coffee is not only good for you, but also good for the planet. They have a range of roasts from their light medium roast with sweet fruity notes and their dark roast with rich, bold taste. So to try out one of my favorite coffees in existence and one that I recommend to everyone still to this day, I've been doing it for years, is Purity Coffee. Go to puritycoffee.com and use the code DRG for 30% off of your first purchase. That is PURITYCOFFEE.com and use the code DRG for 30% off of your order. You know, skincare isn't just about looking good, right? A lot of us want to look good, but it's not just about looking good. It's about nurturing your skin and being well balanced from the inside out. And you know, this world is flooded with a bunch of harsh chemicals that are really insulting our skin, our barrier. And you want something truly effective that is safe. Alitura is one of the best in the game. If you never heard of Alitura, you just think of, you might have seen some black bottles with gold writing on it. It's one of the best, and they're always at health events, and people are loving them. And their quality. Alitura Naturals has crafted a serum that is not only safe, but also incredibly effective. Listen, a lot of you ask me where I get my glow from. This is a huge part of the equation. Their gold serum isn't just another skincare product. It's a testament to the power of natural healing and a commitment to holistic health. It uses organic ingredients like jojoba, olive, rosehip oils, and the gold serum is made organically with plant-derived vitamin A, not synthetic stuff, not that nasty stuff that you're getting in a lot of these over-the-counter products. GHKCU and marine collagen to revitalize your skin. Alitura Naturals has been using the best ingredients in their products for years. They've been pioneering the path for what truly transformed skin should be. So if you're ready to take control of your skin health and experience the pinnacle of natural beauty, I highly recommend checking out Alitura Naturals. For a limited time, you, the Heal Thyself listener, will enjoy the exclusive discount, just the Heal Thyself discount, only for you. That's 20% off of this gold serum. Go to alitura.com and use the code DRG for 20% off. That's Alitura.com and get that 20% discount. It's amazing stuff. I use it every night before bed, and I'm telling you, I'm on fire with my skin in a good way. Check it out. Yeah. Thank you. That's really illuminating for all the people listening. Like, mm-hmm. I know there's people like, oh shoot, that's a good point. I haven't said that to my partner in so long. One of the mm-hmm. most beautiful things a woman told me is like, hey, you could be all of you. You could say, you mm-hmm. know, I love you. So you can say what you need to say. And I'm like, oh, I can say what I need to say. And it made me realize so many times we want to speak up.
Yeah.
And then they're like, be more vulnerable. I want to see more vulnerability. And then when it comes out, unless the person is able to hold it, it's a trigger for them. Mm-hmm. And then what happens with the men is the moment we just become a little vulnerable, it's not accepted or loved. It sucks right back in, and you ain't getting that for a long time.
Exactly.
We kind of hold that in. Is this reinforcement of like how to open the space or close the space a virtue of the female's relationship with her father, the way she grew up, the signals that she learned from dad?
Yeah, and I would say also the counter to that, right? The little boy with his mom.
Yeah, the other side. Yeah.
Same thing, right? To what degree, oftentimes the mother can be the disciplinarian. So oftentimes the masculine, the adult, was only learning and got conditioned by the fact that the feminine isn't safe to speak to, because, you know, if mom finds out what I did, or the fact that I did this, stole that, broke this, I'm up shit creek, right? So these patterns get established early on. Look, it takes so much work. It takes such a big human being. I mean, you know, I've been in the most beautiful relationships with incredible people. And yet, if they've got their own stuff, and they're, as you said, you say something and they get triggered, it's not necessarily their fault, but there's work to be done, you know? And so much of that does come from the absence of usually the opposite gender. I know that's a whole other conversation out there, but, like, you know, the fact that, yes, the little girl didn't necessarily feel safe. The father wasn't present. He maybe worked too hard, or he didn't really reinforce that space of, doesn't matter what, I've got you. I'm always here for you. And beyond words, it has to be actually demonstrated. We can't just know it. We have to feel it. You know, we're sentient beings at the end of the day. And so it's another thing for a woman even to say to her husband, you can tell me anything you want. I want you to be vulnerable. But as soon as he is, to your point, if she in any way snaps, retaliates, judges, criticizes, making people wrong is such a popular sport for humans, unfortunately. Yep. That whole energy of judgment, that is the antithesis of the energy that we're looking for. It's not an embrace, it's repulsion, right? And not, it's not like repulsive as a judgment, but it is energetically repulsive. You're pushing away. Yep. It's an avoidant energy. And so then the masculine or the feminine are going to go into their shell. They'll talk to their girlfriend. They'll talk to their guy friend because they don't feel safe with their particular partner. I get it. There's no judgment. I have all the compassion for the dynamic. But if you're committed to getting really, you know, intimate energetically, intimacy is often collapsed with physicality, which it can show up there. But intimacy to me is an energetic thing where somebody holds you, somebody gets you, somebody allows you as a sovereign being to have your experience and all your feelings. Mm-hmm. That to me is the definition of love, really. Mm. It's letting somebody be who they are, have their experience, and express themselves fully without any judgment.
Unconditionally. Yeah. This is unconditional love.
Yeah, allowing someone their reality, which is kind of a sort of paradoxical statement, because somebody's reality is a reality. You can't allow it or not. It's not your permission to give. They're having it. It's just, are you a safe enough space for somebody to share that reality with you?
Mm. Beautiful. And can we hold their reality as their reality? Because you have a very different experience, right? Like you said, all of these achievements and all of the things we went through, trials, tribulations, that's our reality.
Yeah.
And can it be held unconditionally?
Yes.
We know conditional love throughout our lives so much, and we call that love.
Yeah.
But truly the unconditional love, and it's sort of, if there ever was a goal, is to be able to do that.
Yeah. There's no greater gift you can give another human being. I just want to add the disclaimer. Doesn't mean that you condone or agree with or accept their reality, right? But you are respecting it. You get that that's their reality. Because I know for myself, you know, there's been times where somebody has made false accusations of me in a intimate relationship that I could assert hurt because it's not who I am, but that's their reality. So it's a subtle balance, right? Because honoring somebody's reality while simultaneously, when appropriate, when they've said their piece, say, hey, can I just address this one point? You know, that's actually not a truth, or that doesn't occur to me as a truth. And that's where it takes a little bit of time to be able to learn how to communicate, give someone their sort of time on the pulpit and, okay, I'm listening. And if there's something that's in conflict with your own reality, that's where most people just react.
Yes.
No, you're wrong. That's
really, really fast.
Yeah, really quick. I mean, the number of times that people interrupt, you know, and I would, if there was an accolade I'd give myself or a superpower that I'd describe to what I do, I'd say it's just listening. Like, you know, really allowing people, especially when I work with people, to have their reality and to really pay attention to what it's revealing. Because if you listen, if you really are, if you're truly with someone, if you have presence, again, I think it's one of the greatest gifts is to truly be with someone's experience, then just by virtue of being human, beyond what they say, you'll feel where it's coming from. So the words start to then become secondary, tertiary. You're like, oh, first of all, I'm sorry that that's what you're feeling, but what I'm actually hearing is that you're scared, for example. You know, it's like, and they're like, yeah, I'm really scared. Mm-hmm. And then that's beautiful because you meet them there, right? Versus them having some story about, well, I don't know if I want to go to this thing and so-and-so is going to be there. And that's what they present.
Yeah.
But what you can hear underneath that is like, yeah, I'm kind of scared because I'm embarrassed because the last time I saw that person, you know, there's going to be some history with it. And when you can meet someone there, that's where you feel held energetically.
And imagine how open the man or woman feels in that bond, because it's an incredible moment where someone could be like, oh my God, you can sense what I'm trying to express to you. Yes, I am scared. You're right.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Yes, it's okay. I'm with you. Oh my God, I love you. You know what I mean?
The, like, yeah, intimacy.
The depth of that, that is like the highest level of intimacy.
It is. Listen, I hope anybody and everybody who's listening to this has had at least some moments of that, because that is relating.
That's truly relating.
That's relating. Regardless of the form of the relationship, I'm much more interested in relating. Like, you know, again, one of my quotes, I say most people are in a relationship, but they're not in relationship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Subtle, right? You're in the form of it, but you're not in the energetic dynamic of it. And there's nothing more beautiful than to be in relationship.
Yeah.
To be able to relate, to get someone's reality is, as I said, that's an extension of love.
And there's no love, like there's no touch or words of affirmation or no gift that would equal the depth of that connection of relating.
No, but the beauty is that when you have that depth of relating, if you are in a appropriately, you know, romantic relationship, then intimacy physically just becomes exponentially otherworldly.
Yeah. It's just a beautiful experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that we hit that on the head, man. I could talk about relationships all the time because
yeah.
We got a lot of listeners who are asking relationship questions all the time.
Great. Hopefully this helps.
These are the keys that we're really listening to.
Yeah.
You know, something incredible that I saw on your Instagram the other day, I think it's when you posted it. It was about this guy smoking in the hot tub.
Yeah.
And I want to start bringing into this conversation the habits that we have that are so self-sabotaging.
Yeah.
There's so many people that go, I feel like I'm doing everything right, but I just can't get as much visibility or want or as much money as I want.
Yeah.
And there's these self-sabotaging habits.
Yeah.
Can you give that example of the hot tub first and foremost? Because I thought it was so cool.
Yeah.
And then also, why do we keep going into this self-sabotaging, whether it's in relationships, but maybe just life with work, with all the things that we have?
Mm-hmm. So the hot tub, for sure. So great question. So the hot tub, and as a prelude to the dynamics that are at play there, I was just sitting, it was in Arizona. I was there working with a professional golfer at a tournament. And just at the end of the day, I actually caddied that week I don't normally caddy, but he needed it. And it was a good way for us to bond and for me to see his behavior psychologically on the course. Anyway, so at the end of the day, I'm sitting in the hot tub. His family, a couple with their baby, comes in, and it was a big hot tub. So on the other side, the woman was playing with the baby outside. And the husband was near me. He's like, you know, the typical social interactions. Like, hey, how are you doing? And you're here on vacation. And, you know, we get to sort of relate. I'm like, oh, I'm actually here for a golf tournament. He's like, oh, you're a player. I'm like, well, I play, but I'm not that good. And then I said, no, I'm here. I sort of, you know, they call me the mind architect, or I call myself the mind architect, and I help pro athletes and people get out of their own way. And he's like, that's awesome. And he just went straight to it. He said, so how would you stop me smoking? So I'm listening from the energy that I was speaking to earlier, being present with him. And I gave the honest answer. I said, I wouldn't. So now he's like in a world where smoking is renowned for being bad. Like he's in the human world, people know at this point that smoking is not good for you. So he's asking a question that has the undercurrent of like, okay, will you fix what is inherently a problem? So he's now confused because I said, I wouldn't. So that sort of is contrary to everyday vernacular of like, well, you want to quit smoking. So that gave, it got more presence. He's like, well, what do you mean you wouldn't help me stop smoking? I said, well, because there's nothing wrong with smoking. Now he's really confused, right? I said, you're just smoking. Smoking is smoking. I'm not denying the physiological impacts. If you're built like an ox, you'll probably get away with it. If you're more sensitive, if you're a Vata constitution, if you maybe have a cognitive disorder in your lung, there's many factors that can account for whether you get away with it or not. I said, there's nothing wrong with smoking. You're just smoking. And he's like, and then I said, let me ask you a question. Do you judge yourself for smoking? He's like, absolutely. I said, well, there's your problem. And I said, because you judge yourself for smoking, the smoking is the byproduct. I said, you judged yourself way before you started smoking. He's like, yeah, I've been judging myself for years. I'm like, yeah, smoking is the means by which you cope with the judgment. Smoking is just the symptom. you know, like any quote unquote substance, right? That's not the problem. When people tell me they do whatever, smoke too much weed, they do cocaine, they drink, they whatever it is, pick your poison. For me, it always comes back to the dialogue you have with yourself, right? This is the self-sabotage to now go to the second part of your question, why people don't have enough visibility or they don't make enough money or whatever, they can't find the right one. It's because of this internal critic, this idea that you are flawed, that somehow who you are is not enough, that you're not loved, that you're not wanted, whatever, fill in the knot, right? And so I said, so then I asked him, I said, so is there anything like wrong with you, inherently wrong with you? And he's like, well, no, I thought there's something wrong with me because I smoke. But I'm like, well, that's the cart before the horse, right? It's like, yeah. No, you think there's something wrong with you. Energetically, that creates suffering. That's a very discomforting energy to sit in. It's self-berating. And you found relief in nicotine. He's like, absolutely. And I said, now you reinforce that dialogue. You get to be right. As I said earlier, the ego wants to be right. See, I'm a loser. I'm a bad person. I've let my parents down. Fill in the blank of ways that you get to be right about your own inadequacy. And then you use smoking as the way to sustain that. And I said, but when you realize there's nothing wrong with you other than the conversation you have about yourself, which is just founded in words, then there's nothing to fight. Mm. So that was that exchange. I saw him like a few days later and he came running up to me like a little kid. He's like, I haven't even had a cigarette. I'm like, great, because you haven't been beating the shit out of yourself. So you don't need relief from your own internally created suffering. So that's where, you know, you start to see that we are, as I said earlier, a walking conversation. Why it's difficult to access that is because the most prominent and powerful conversations that impact us are part of our subconscious, right? They're things that we took on at a very young age. And then we've just developed the compensations as an adult. Like for a woman who thinks she's not fundamentally loved or beautiful, there'll be a lot of emphasis on trying to be beautiful. And there may be strategies she uses from cosmetics to clothing to maybe plastic surgery as a means to try and garner what she thinks she's missing because of how she sees herself. For the guy, it's the antithesis. It's in performance usually, right? I've got to be the fastest, the strongest, the wealthiest, the best. And so those compensations are usually on top of a feeling of not being enough as well. So there, until you reveal these subconscious constraints, whatever it is that you want in the outside world is usually going to be that invisible ceiling that you keep hitting your head up against.
Yeah.
It's not that it's not there. It's all available in the quantum field. Like this isn't a universe of pure possibility. It's what you're hitting your head up against is your own constraints. Mm-hmm. And I use yoga as a perfect example, right? Because when I went to yoga sometimes with my athletes who are great athletes, they're like, fuck, yoga is so hard. I'm like, yoga's not hard, you're just stiff.
Yeah.
Right? So just as an anatomical, very easy visual, right? Like, and I know for myself, like tighter hamstrings, internal rotation, all the things we do like this. So it means opening up this way, we're usually tight. So yoga is the difficulty of doing yoga and poses is commensurate with the degree to which you're not open anatomically. People can get that, right? So that's a nice correlate to the mental. So the degree to which you're not getting what you want in life is the degree to which you are tight mentally.
Mm, beautiful. Because now we have sort of that invisible manifestation, that invisible barometer.
Yeah.
Right? We can see, all right, like, wait a minute, hold on. Mm-hmm. I haven't been getting this X, Y, Z, A, B. I'm like, whoa, okay, well, I must be constrained mentally.
Yes.
You know, because we don't have that practice. We can't see. It's not tangible.
So subtle. Yeah.
Okay. So we can actually do an audit of our lives then.
Yeah.
Right. So what are all the things that we want to achieve or create or attract?
Yeah.
And if we keep not being able to, like the invisible ceiling, as you said, then we have to look at our subconscious cues that are coming in.
That would be the place to look. You don't have to, just to keep it very specific in language, because that's another resistant energy. I have to. I should. I must. Right. These languages... You know, like that's why spelling is, you know, to cast spells. Like, I don't know if you know, but abracadabra, like magic, right? To me, life is magic. Abracadabra, its actual translation from the Hebrew is like, as I speak, so I create.
Incredible.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. So as I speak, so I create. That's magic. If you really get it, right? Like we're having a conversation now. We're not necessarily creating anything. We're creating a conversation, hopefully some inspiration. But if I came to you and you're a contractor, and I said, hey, I want to build a house with you, and this is what it's going to look like. I'm using words, hot air. And then in 3, 6, 8 months or how, like I have a house.
That's magic.
If you don't understand that's fucking magic, I don't know what else to tell you.
that's magic.
Right? So this is where I get so passionate about words and language, because people don't understand. As I tell people, words are the wardrobe for the soul. The soul's infinite, but if you're living in words that are by design confined because you're not being responsible for the ones you're using, then your soul is going to be, quote unquote, feeling trapped.
Yep.
It's not expansive. So yeah, that's magic, is you're taking hot air through declaration. You're saying, I want to fill in the blank. Now, where it gets slippery is that most people say what they want as a reaction to what they don't want, which is part of their subconscious programming, right? Mm-hmm. So again, you've got to be conscious of, like, am I saying I want that because of a reaction to something I don't want, then you're actually reinforcing the constraint.
I see.
Very subtle, right? So if somebody says, I want to lose weight, what they're actually saying is, I feel that I'm overweight or I'm fat. That's why all the weight loss diets in the world don't work, because people keep reinforcing the subtler identity, and feeling that you're overweight or there's something wrong with you is a subtler program, which is that I'm not loved or I'm not wanted. And that's why people found comfort in food, like the guy smoking the cigarette or whatever, right? So there's many layers to this to understand where's the actual constraint. But nonetheless, it's still founded in words. It's still magic. It still works. It just, you're committed to something that's a limitation, but you're still creating it. That's how powerful you are.
Unbelievable. We're creating hot air spells all day.
All day.
And we don't even realize what we're saying to ourselves.
No.
And then the ones that don't come out of our mouth and they're just the stories in our head.
Yeah.
Those are the air spells in our brain. You know,
yeah.
It's incredible because it's reinforcing every day our reality, you're saying.
Yeah. Especially those, because they're so insidious, because they're so close that people listen. Like, you go to bed, you lie in bed, it's quiet, and you can hear this, oh, I want to do da 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 da. That noise, it occurs to people as though it's who they are. But it's not who you are. It can't be, because you're aware of it. If you're aware of the things you're thinking, you can't be the thoughts.
Right.
I mean, I know it gets a little heady, but like, that's just basic physics, right? I'm aware of the fact you're over there and you're talking. Okay, it's easier. There's like, you know, 6 feet between us. When you're in your bed and you're listening to your head, or you're in the shower, it's right there. It's like, this is me. No, you're the pure awareness, the consciousness that is the presence, that is the witness of the thought. Mm-hmm. It's like a 24-hour radio show. The question is, to what degree are you picking particular stories and shows that you listen to that reinforce the constraint of your own ego? Or are you being inspired by the narrative that is your true desire,
mm-hmm.
that is the language of your soul?
Mm-hmm.
And we tend to defer, unfortunately, to the ego, because again, it wants to be right, and we live in a space where we feel scared or whatever it is, and it's very confining, but it's all there. It's just how, again, it comes back to how good of a listener are you.
But then isn't this so hard for us to be like, well, I have thousands of thoughts a day.
Mm-hmm.
You probably know more. How many? 20,000, 30,000. And then we go, how am I going to control all those thoughts?
Yeah.
How am I going to control all these words? I especially me, I say a lot of words a day.
Yeah.
So is there a practice, or is there like a some sort of exercise or strategy that we can take to start becoming more aware?
Yeah. So the first thing to do is recognize you don't have to control any of it.
Great.
So the control component is all the ego, right?
There's a relief.
Think about it right now as we sit here. Think about, like, it would actually be overwhelming to the point of probably death if you, right now in this world, in this room, we could be exposed to all of the noise that's going on in the world, around the world. And even if that was just radio shows and podcasts, absolutely overwhelming if you think about it, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of noise out there. But let's just say in your own house, and you listen to the radio, you listen to your phone, whatever you're listening to, it's, yeah, 24 hours of quote unquote, you know, storytelling noise, whatever it is. But you get to discern. Discernment is where this comes in, not control. Discern which story do you wish to assign to your actions? Meaning, what are you quote unquote inspired by versus defined by? Right. So most people are defined by the constraints, the limitations. I'm not this. I'm not that. Fill in the blank. And so the ego wants to be right about that. So you tune into that show every day. It's like, oh, this is my favorite show. This is where I beat the shit out of myself. And I've got evidence all day for why I'm not going to succeed in my career, or I'm not going to find a beautiful, loving relationship. That show is, you know, it's like people tune into their favorite radio show, podcast, or TV show, right? Like, they like the host. They like the, it's just a habit. But the same is true of the ego. So the tip is, first of all, notice what shows you're addicted to. It's a form of addiction because, again, the ego wants to be right. That's in one of my quotes. I say, being right is a poor man's version of self-worth. Because at least you got that, I'll show you that I can fuck this up. You didn't actually want to fuck up the career, your health, your relationship, but at least you did and you got right. You're right. There's some value in that. Yeah. It's insane. Yeah. So notice where you're trying to always be right. And secondly, you know, the easiest thing to do is slow down.
Slow down.
Ooh. Slow down. Pay attention. Why are you actually saying what you're saying? Is it a real truth? Or are you trying to be right about something? Usually it's that. Or the flip side, you're trying to make someone wrong for something. I mean, making people wrong it's a Olympic sport for humans. I mean, and everyone's winning gold, you know, because people are good at it. So notice that. And yeah, just it's listening versus just thinking that you have to stop, control, avoid thoughts. It's just be with, like, if a five-year-old came up to you and said, you know what, you're an idiot, you're fat, you know, and if you weren't, like, you're not, great shape, not an idiot, then it's kind of cute, you know, it's adorable. But if someone came up to you and said something, you know, without trying to reveal anything that would be discomforting for you, but you know what, you're not a very sensitive person, like, you've been really bad to girlfriends, you know, that might get your attention. There's a show that, again, I'm just picking stuff out of thin air here, you know, it's like, oof. Right? Because it resonates.
Right.
Still just noise, but something that is a little closer to the bone for you, that sort of there's a semblance of truth. Or, as again, quotes obviously just flow through me, but I say other people's words can only upset you to the degree that you already believe them.
Yeah.
So that's again, goes back to what I said earlier about, like, you know, life is going to present you with people and circumstances to reveal where you're not free. So wherever you get triggered, there's an opportunity to see what is the constraint in you. And sometimes it's a good thing to be revealed. Like, you can be responsible, go, wow, yeah, I have been irresponsible. I've been a dick, or I've been mean, or whatever it is. You know, sometimes people's accusations do have a component of lesson and truth in them. So to pay attention to where do you get triggered and see the absence of freedom. And then, like I said earlier, in the absence of that constraint, what becomes available to you, and you start to tune into a new show. I mean, literally, quite literally, in the realm of frequencies, when you step out of a constraint, which is a lower frequency, you get exposed to new music. It is no different than moving the dial on a radio. You go to a different frequency. What does that mean? You start playing different tunes.
Whole new experience.
Whole new experience. When I'm working with people, and in my mastermind, which is my 3-month container, which is sort of my most powerful offering, when I'm coaching people, because the morning is dedicated to theory, teaching much of this and my methodology, in the afternoon I coach people, and then I help people see what I'm doing, and you see the lights go on, there's nothing more beautiful, right? When someone steps out of their constraint. But what I will invariably say to the person is, I'm introducing you to a world with which you're not familiar.
Yeah. Because it's brand new.
It's brand new.
It's a whole nother radio station that wasn't accessible from before.
They didn't even know it existed.
Didn't know it existed. Might have been there, but it hasn't been tuned in.
Yep. Absolutely.
And then this is when we start attracting new experiences with work, new partners, new friends, new state of health.
Yeah.
And then we go, I didn't know this was all possible because I was going to the doctor and getting this medication and seeing the same people on dates.
Yeah.
And wow, because that's encouraging, because it's a realm of possibility that is there for every single person viewing and listening.
Yes.
Like, it's there for us. And it really takes us tuning into that. The last part of this, I know you've been trained with Ayurveda. You love Ayurveda stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And you mentioned the physical downstream.
Yeah.
You mentioned a little about the nervous system. What happens when we're in that subconscious constraint away from our own freedom? What's happening in our body that's manifesting as, I'm sick, my energy's poor, or my body, I have this illness? What's happening in between?
Sure. Great question. So I would go back to the upstream source of it all, which is why I love the word disease, right? Because a lot of people have disease. But if you break it down into sort of, we could say it's ontological genesis of how it came, it's dis-ease, the absence of ease. So if energetically, emotionally, psychologically, you're in the absence of ease, which we could call, you know, as a lay term, stress, you're not in ease, then eventually over time, to whatever degree you have a strong, robust constitution or not, disease will manifest over time. Because if you're in that state, so anatomically, physiologically, what happens is, through the lens of Ayurveda, we have these seven dhatus, these tissues, right? So you eat, And in lay terms, that becomes like the plasma. We call it rasa. Then it gets into the blood, and then it gets into the muscle, and then it gets into the bone. And then it eventually comes down to the reproductive system, which is the source of creation, right? Whether it's be procreation or just being a creative being, the ability to recreate a cell without any sort of, you know, deformities or compromise. So that cascade, if you're in a state of stress, dis-ease, because of the psychological world you live in, which is fight or flight, you're not digesting your food properly, right? Because parasympathetic would be rest and digest. Most people are in sympathetic because they're in a state of, I'm not this, I'm not that. Going back to the very original question, feeling they're separate, so they have to survive. That means then the cascade through your body, as a very simple metaphor, if we've got seven tissue systems through the lens of Ayurveda, and each tissue system needs $10 as a way of surviving, but you're intaking $40 or $50, there's compromise, right? Yeah. They're not all being quote unquote satiated or fulfilled. So that means then eventually that system starts to degenerate. Now, this is also subtle. I mean, this happens over decades for some people, right? Which is going back to my statement that if you want to have real health, real vitality, you have to free your mind. That's absolutely, for me, categorically number one, why I'm so passionate. Like in my Freedom Platform, I have my Free Your Mind program, right? Yeah. So people can do that. Then you can access vitality we were talking about. So that's what happens in the body and why people get sick, is because energetically, I know this is a big thought for people, but just humor me. The brain, yes, is in the skull, but your body is inside of your mind. So think about it this way. I know you've had a lot of experiences of being in a house that isn't perhaps healthy, moldy environment.
Yeah.
Then you are inside of that space. That means you are at the impact of your container. The body, as far as I'm concerned, is at the impact of the container, which is our dialogue, our mind. So our aura, you know, if you imagine that image going around the body, is kind of like the mind. And so if we're living in a hostile container of I'm not wanted, I'm not loved, I'm a piece of crap, whatever it is that people have, then your body is in a hostile environment, dis-ease. You can't be at peace. You're not being held by a story that is loving, compassionate, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the cascade. So then obviously it manifests if you're an athlete who played football as a kid, you know, and you've got a dodgy knee, then now you're 40-year-old and you're getting arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis. That's just where it locates, because that's the absence of integrity there. But it's really the inflammation that's been accumulating over decades that's just now found a nice cozy home to express itself in your knee. For somebody else, for a woman, you know, and obviously there's a genetic component, right? We have our predispositions based on our genome. But yeah, that's why, to me, having a mind that is based in freedom, love, and pure possibility is the greatest access to having vitality physically.
I'm as a visual person, mm-hmm. that visual just changed everything, because I totally can see, are you held by your stories? Are you kind to yourself?
Yeah.
And that's affecting your body.
Yeah.
Because me knowing my moldy homes that I was living in, I know the effect of the container. So just to think of the mind as the container for everything else, versus a lot of people associate it like right here in between our eyes, right?
Yeah.
No. It's the container, and those stories are what's creating our health or not creating our health.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So I wanted to bring to the surface some of your projects and offerings that you have.
Yeah.
You mentioned the mastermind. You said that's the highest level one. What is this, for coaches?
No, it's for anybody. I mean, usually people who are committed to making a difference. So they could be a coach, they could be a yoga teacher, a nutritionist, they could be an executive, a leader, or just a parent who wants to make a difference to kids. So anybody who deals with humans, but humans you care about, and you want to be able to help them break free and end their suffering.
Beautiful. And then you have another one for...
Yeah. So that mastermind is a 3-month container. We're in the middle of one right now, depending on when this comes out, but people can always go to the website and sign up. Then the one that's more accessible for everybody is this membership platform called Freedom. So that's my version of a conscious Netflix, right? It's like, instead of watching garbage and violence and predictive programming on their platform, you know, you could do self-development work. To me, I say Freedom is where you get spiritual awakening with human optimization. It's the merging and the alchemy of soul and matter. So, you know, most people out there, obviously there's people who are meditators and spiritual teachers, that's great, but maybe they don't help you to have powerful physical body or great relationships or how to make money. You know, so I like to speak to both camps, right? That yes, We're spiritual beings having human experience. Let's remember that so we can live from our divinity, from our essence, where there's just boundless possibility. But then let's have some practical tips on how we can actually navigate this human experience. Oh, yeah. So that's Freedom. And it's a very, very cheap or affordable monthly subscription. Yeah.
Yeah. We were just saying we spend more on a few coffees a month. You know what I mean? Or fancy dinners or even going out for drinks or something like that. You know, that's already expenses. Yeah. Let's do something for the better, for bettering ourselves, bettering our loved ones. What's the website you mentioned?
PeterKrohn.com.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all on there. You can sign up for future masterminds. You can join Freedom right there. That's really my legacy now moving forward is that I want to get. It's an audacious statement, but as I said earlier, magic, the power of words. Yeah. This is my vision. This is my commitment. I want to inspire 1 billion people to find true freedom.
Why not?
Yeah.
You're that powerful. And I know you don't have the stories that hold you back. So yeah. I'm just waiting to see that number.
Yeah.
Man, my boy, Peter Crow, my guy. Listen, everyone viewing, listen, go back to the first episode too, if you love this one. Mm-hmm. Fantastic as always. Nothing less than ever expected. It is fire, gems, freedom. I love you, man. And I'm happy that you came on for the second one. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I love you too. Thanks for having me on. And much love to everybody out there. More than anything, let's find freedom in all areas of your life.
Freedom, like George Michael said. Thank you so much.
Freedom.
There you go.